We're back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, and our conversation today is with Perry Wiggins. He's the Executive Director of the Governor's Military Council, and boy, we're going to talk about what's the news of the day here. We're hearing a lot in the national media, and that's coronavirus. It's affecting a lot of things, and I'm sure military's not immune. That's a bad pun there, but not immune to this. You still have to deploy to these countries where some of the hot spots are, and life goes on.
No, it's true. I mean, leadership takes these into consideration, and you know, the number one thing is to not blow it out of proportion, to basically maintain a sense of readiness here in our nation. The military is one of those organizations that we have to take care of because they stand on point. And so it impacts the number of personnel as far as readiness is concerned. And commanders want to limit exposure, but at the same time, we have to complete our mission, just as we see with 2nd Brigade going out the door. So I guarantee I talked to the soldiers. I talked to the leadership when I was at the deployability center there. And they understand the issue, but they're not alarmed about the issue. And I think that's something our nation can take into consideration as well, is we have a great healthcare system in our nation, one of the best in the world. We have professionals out there every day that are working these types of things. And I believe that our nation is very well prepared. In my capacity as 5th United States Army Commander at Fort Sam Houston several years ago, this was one of the things that we looked at, prepared, and trained for was a pandemic.
Well, and there, you know, and that's good that there's training. There's always challenges here, though, because I think the immediate fear with the public is, well, they're going to deploy here to these countries. They're going to come back here and potentially bring that here.
Well, I guarantee you the military is testing and using all the testing that we have available to screen the soldiers that are returning, both probably prior to leaving the particular theater they're in and then upon their return. So they're very thorough with that because, once again, we don't need our formations to be impacted because there's such a significant mission that we have. They got to be ready to deploy at a moment's notice throughout the world to protect our liberties and freedoms. And a disease is just as dangerous as bullets flying if it takes individuals out of the formation.
Yeah. Well, and I know that in the past, you know, military have had to go into some very dangerous circumstances here. We, you know, it's been well documented in all of the wars that they've fought in here. And the, you know, really bioterrorism is something that exists.
You know, we just celebrated Desert Storm, Desert Shield in February 24th, and a lot of people, it just kind of went under the radar scope. But I remember as I was deploying, them talking about anthrax and other things that Saddam Hussein had. And I know a number of those folks, some of them listening probably in this audience right here, remembered the anthrax tablets that we took because it was hard to swallow them, and the little PB tablets that we took in preparation for nerve agent and anthrax and other. So the military prepares. They do a lot of study on this, and there's a lot of mechanisms that we put in place to not only secure the force but also protect our citizenry when we return back.
Hmm. Well, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I'm curious, too, you know, the coronavirus kind of overshadows a lot of things with, you know, they say the simple thing to do is wash your hands. And same thing that you do with the common flu. I'm curious, when soldiers get sick, because I'm sure it happens, it's
well,
the same
thing.
Well,
I mean, we had the Ebola piece that took place in Africa not too long ago. A lot of people don't remember that, kind of right. Fell off the radar scope. But we sent the 101st Division out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, to Africa in order to prep and prepare and to assist. And those soldiers deployed, they executed a mission, and they returned home. And we had no instances of Ebola. The difference is we take the appropriate countermeasures and mitigation measures to do it. If a soldier is infected or impacted, then we do the same things we do with a citizen here in the United States. We quarantine them. We make sure that we provide them the appropriate medical care until they are cured, and then we bring them back into the force. I just think the bottom line for our Americans, and this is my opinion, we don't need to overreact here. We've had other things that rose to the occasion, SARS out there as well, that came and went. But we have people who are working feverishly right now to find the immunizations and the cures to take care of this particular disease. And we've got to trust in that and not sit and become overexcited, because sometimes that excitement and that anxiety creates more problem than the actual virus.
General, you had made mention of Desert Storm, and you know that anniversary. Next year will mark 20 years. Kind of curious as if there's any plans on recognition, specifically maybe at Fort Riley, in honor of that 20th anniversary. Because, you know, you made mention earlier about, you know, the attitude of the general public, especially around this area, changed dramatically after Fort Riley's engagement in Desert Storm. And I think it'd be interesting, you know, if there is, you know, what there may be in recognition of that. Maybe we need to go to Fort Riley and the historians there to put something together if they don't already have it in the books.
No, that's a good question, Dave. You know, the thing I look at is, you know, Desert Storm and Desert Shield, when you think about the magnitude of the deployment that went into that theater, and then in 100 hours, basically, a significant foe was defeated, and then we returned back home. There was a lot of significant muscle movements that took place in order to get our nation in there and get it prepared. And the folks that fought it came back. A lot of them basically got out of the military, rolled up their sleeves, went back to work, and they need to be recognized. There was a significant accomplishment there. And I tell people all the time, if you read Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation, it's a great book to read, because we're losing World War II veterans at a significant rate, and they are true heroes. But the next greatest generation is alive and well today. And I believe personally it started with those great Americans that responded to Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then came home and continued to serve this nation. So I will definitely ask. I think that's something significant. I think it's a significant milestone, not only in our military, but in our nation.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I was a little boy when Desert Storm was happening, and you know, I think it'd be good for, you know, my generation to have more knowledge of that war here, because it's not as well documented as some of the others. But
no.
And you know, one of the things that I think is kind of fascinating is that, you know, our high school students were born after that.
Yep.
Anybody that's in high school right now was born after 9/11 and Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. Crazy to think about that span of time.
Sure, but you know, they've now been in Operation Enduring Freedom, Iraq, Afghanistan, for the past 18 years. They've sort of been a persistent conflict. But I will tell you, that fight was a little bit different than what we experienced in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and the anxiety. I mean, I was one of the first Apache units across the berm. And I remember reading in Stars and Stripes, because the Apache was relatively new, untested in battle, that the life expectancy of an Apache pilot was somewhere around 90 seconds against Saddam Hussein's integrated air defense. And so that created the anxiety. But what really turned out was the Apache was a significant weapon system, a lot of weapon systems, the M1 tank, the Abrams. All those were birthed during Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and they performed magnificently. And so those generational pieces of equipment that were introduced and continue to be transformed, I think they're significant in the combined arms maneuver fight, because guess what? Our old friends, the Russians, have basically stood back up, right? And so we have to be prepared now not only to fight a counterinsurgency, but to fight a combined arms maneuver, which means we bring artillery, we bring aviation, we bring armor and infantrymen together in a combined arms fight to defeat our foes. That's more complex. I know I'll hear a lot from a lot of people out there in radio land, but I truly believe it is a much more complex training requirement when you're doing that type of fight than doing a counterinsurgency.
You know what's something that's kind of gone, and I'm just going to ask off the cuff here, but one thing that was in the national news a couple months ago and it's kind of disappeared is, so what's the state with the latest with Iran? Have we heard any more about possible military encounters there?
No, you know, Iran's always out there, trying to instigate things. They have been for a long time. I don't understand why people just recently think Iran's become a problem. Mm-hmm. Iran has been a problem for a long, long time. And it's like a cancer. It'll metastasize if you don't try to attack it. So, you know, the bottom line is Iran has funded people out there to try to attack our very ways of life. They can't stand America. You can just turn on the TV and listen to what they say. They're burning the American flag. They're burning people in effigy. That's not what I consider normal in the human race. They literally have a vitriol toward the United States, and they'll continue to do so until, I think long into the future. So we just got to keep an eye. But they stay quiet for a little while, then they pop up. You know, they stay quiet, and then they pop up. That's been their track record for a long time. And I think we as a nation need to protect our citizens and need to protect our military. And so staying on point, staying aware, I think significant when you're dealing with people like Iran and Korea.
All right. Very well said. Again, Perry Wiggins, he is the executive director of the Governor's Military Council. We've got about 30 seconds left. Anything you're looking forward to here this weekend?
No, I think the bottom line is, and we started it off with the census, and I think mm-hmm. that's something that each individual here in the state of Kansas has a moral obligation to be counted. I think we got to go forth, and just like voting is one of our rights, I think this census is something that's important and critical to our state. And I would ask that each person out there take it as your mission to go and make sure you count everyone in your household so that we don't lose valuable dollars here in the state that can be applied to support our citizens.
All right. And you can find more at 2020census.gov. And we're going to be hearing a lot more about that as we get closer and closer to April 1st. Mr. Wiggins, appreciate you being here, and thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That'll do it here for In Focus today on News Radio KMAN. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. We'll have Karen Hibbard from the Convention and Visitors Bureau, John Job from Research and Extension, and Jamie Morris Hardiman from Thrive.
Clark Howard is up after CBS News. Rush Limbaugh's show today, hosted by Mark Stein. I understand Rush will return tomorrow. Clark, Dan Patrick, and then The Game, and we have the Bruce Weber Show beginning at 7 o'clock tonight here at News Radio KMAN. Good morning. It's 10 o'clock at KMAN.